This week's parsha introduces us to a very significant concept, the concept of kinah. Kinah is often translated as jealousy, but sometimes kinah has another translation, which of course is of a positive nature. If you will examine the Rishonim, let the Rishonim point out there are two aspects to kinah. There's a positive aspect to kinah and a negative aspect to kinah. Rabbeinu B'chaye, in his introduction to this week's parsha, accentuates these two aspects, the duality of kinah. He quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, where Shlomo HaMelech says, "Chaye b'sarim leit marpei, v'rekev atzamos kinah." Kinah can, Rachmana Litzlan, lead to disastrous consequences, but kinah also has a positive aspect to it. And of course, what does it depend on? The lave of a person, the heart of a person. The same idea is also cited by the Pella Yoetz, one of the famous Sitrei Musar, of one of the great Gedolei Achronim. He begins by noting, kinah hi mida ra ma'od. Kinah is a terrible mida. He cites the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, ha-kinah va-taiva va-kavod motzi'in es-ha-adam min ha-olam. Kinah is one of the elements that can literally drive a person out of this world. Because kinah, when it's translated as jealousy or envy, when a person is very envious of another individual, and as a result will harbor feelings of jealousy, feelings of kinah, feelings of envy, those obviously are not positive in nature. And that could lead to unfortunate consequences. But he also points out, the Pella Yoetz and Rabbeinu B'chaye, yesh kinah tova. There's also kinah of a positive nature. As Chazal say in Masechet Bava Basra, Aleph, kinah sofrim tarbe chachma. If a person is envious or jealous of an individual who's a great Talmid Chacham, or someone who's a great Balmidos, or for that matter, what Chazal tell us, that a person is obligated to say, Masai Yagil Masai, the Masai Avram Yitzhakiyako. If a person sees another individual who's very Matsliach in his midos, in his chesed, in his learning, in his gutzkeit, that's a kinah that one should have. And of course, these two sides of the coin, one of them which leaves a lot to be desired, and the other of a positive nature, these two sides of kinah are critical. And of course, one should obviously choose the positive side and not chas v'shalom the negative side. And that's exactly what the Torah records here in the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, that the kinah that Pinchas demonstrated, says the Pella Yoetz, shehi tova ad ma'od, of a very positive nature, namely, lekanos kinas Hashem tzvokos. It was the kinah that Hashem Yisbarach himself would have demonstrated, was now demonstrated by Pinchas, whom Chazal called Kanoi ben Kanoi. A Kanoi, the son of a Kanoi. And the Gemara points out in Brachos and Avkov, the Gemara says, why is it that the earlier Rishonim was Zochet to many Nisim, and the Achronim were not Zochet to Nisim? And the Gemara at the end of this discussion points out, because of Mesiras Nefesh. In order for a person to be a Kanoi, it requires a fair amount of Mesiras Nefesh. It requires a fair amount of MS. And this is the quality that we're going to, Yetz Hashem, attempt to discover and discuss and try to ferret out what are some of the parameters of kinah that one should pursue. The ones that one should avoid, probably we're quite aware of. However, we'll attempt to see if we can define a bit more carefully the elements of kinah. When we decided my wife and I and our family to come to Eretz Israel many, many years ago. So I consulted a lot of Gedolei Yisrael, Talmidei Chachamim, Ba'al Batim. I spoke to people who live in Eretz Israel, those who are very familiar with Eretz Israel. They told me the following. There's no question that the ideal for a Jew is to live in Eretz Israel. And I accepted that. So I said, are there any possible drawbacks that I should be concerned about? And they answered, Kimat Pe'echon, there may be only one problem that you have to be concerned about. And that's called Kados. You may encounter people who have certain extreme natures and tend to be extremists in Eretz Israel. So I essentially didn't really believe them. And I assumed they were possibly exaggerating a little bit or distending the truth a little bit. And now, many, many years later, I discovered that there is some element of MS to what they told me. There are kadoyim in Eretz Yisrael, and there are different types of kadoyim. Those of a positive nature, and those, unfortunately, of a negative nature. We have to obviously avoid those that are engaged in negative behavior, and we have to try to simulate those who are kadoyim of a positive nature. Kina is one of the midos of Hashem Yisbarach. And the Gemara says in Sefer Daf Yud Aleph, Mahu Abato. There's a concept called Imitati Odei. We're supposed to simulate the midos of Hashem Yisbarach. But obviously, that has to be done with seichel, with guidance, with proper hadracha. And we have to use the models that are found in the Torah and in Tanakh, the models that are of the kinah, which is of a positive nature. And it's those areas that we have to try our best to introduce into our lives. One of the things that the people told me, they say the Middle East, they told me, is a cauldron. And living in the Middle East, Mizrach HaTichon, you'll encounter many, many passionate people of all different types. And there's no question that there's a lot of passion, Baruch Hashem, that exists here in Eretz Yisrael. And a lot of that passion is of a positive nature. And sometimes that passion can be misdirected, misguided. And that's exactly what we have to try to avoid to the extent that we can. But undoubtedly, living in Eretz Yisrael is a tremendous chus, a tremendous simcha that one can have. But one has to avoid some of the nicholim. There are along the way sometimes obstacles, namely the use of kina inappropriately, and to a certain extent, sometimes even those of us in the frum world adapt a certain tactic which the Chazal described as called the olam gava. Somehow, the world around us, which is unfortunately plagued with violence and plagued with frontal assaults, both with these are methodologies and tactics that somehow not only become kosher, but become the preferred ideal. The question which I'm raising is every type of zealotry not only to be lauded, but also to be adopted as my modus operandi? What are the parameters of kados, of zealotry? Is it no holds barred? How radicalized can one become l'shem shamayim, because everything a person does is l'shem shamayim? I once read a striking comment of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, the former chief rabbi of England. He wrote the following, and I quote, "Throughout history, people have hated in the name of God, but in the name of God of love. They practice cruelty in the name of the God of compassion. They killed in the name of the God of life. And they waged war in the name of the God of peace." And he continues by saying the following, "None of the world's great religions has been exempt from this at one point or another in time, but the time has come to say enough." So I would like to present to you, as I said, a brief analysis of some of the parameters of zealotry from a Torah or halachic perspective, and attempt to delineate some of the contours of that issue. I'll begin by referring to a number of psukim in Tanakh. Let's begin with the episode of Shimon Velevi that the Torah describes in Sefer Bereishis, that which occurred in the city of Shechem. The Torah describes a horrific episode that occurred with Dinah, and as a result, Shimon Velevi went, and the Torah describes how they essentially eliminated the entire city of Shechem. We don't encounter there, at first glance, any attempt on the part of Shimon Velevi to engage in any kind of what is known in modern parlance as hasbara, to explain to the populace of the city of Shechem the gravity, the enormity of the actions that they engaged in, nor do we see any attempt to effect any kind of what's called in modern Hebrew parlance a sulcha, kind of rapprochement, which is very much in vogue in the Middle East. They simply went ahead by Yichu Ishkarbo, they took a sword, they asked that the entire city is worthy of the death penalty, and they decimated an entire city. What was the response of Yaakov Avinu? When Yaakov saw what happened, so Yaakov makes the following statement. Achartem osi, Yaakov said to Shimon Velevi, you have sullied me. Lahabishayni, Yoshri Haaretz Aknani Vaprizi, V'neasu Alay V'ikuni V'nishmati Adiyu Besi. What was Yaakov concerned about? That the overwhelming hordes will encompass him, will destroy him. And their response is, Shimon Velevi, Achzono Yaseh Sachoseinu. They're going to make our sister into Achmon Litzlan Azono. So we notice that Yaakov did not react with indignation to the act that they did. Yaakov does not discuss the ethical problematica of what they did, but indicates that logically it was not an expedient move, because his numbers in terms of his family, we're talking about a small family, vis-a-vis the non-Jewish nations around them that are obviously far greater than a small family. And the Torah itself is made, and the Torah testifies, that only because of the intervention of Hashem Yisbarach, Pasuk says, Vayichitas Elokim, that there was a fear of Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu visited upon all the nations, V'lorotu Acharei B'nei Yaakov. That's why they did not pursue Shimon Velevi, did not pursue the family of Yaakov. The fear of God that descended upon all the nations, the denizens, inhibited them from attacking Yaakov and his family. But the two brothers that I just mentioned, Shimon Velevi, they issue a rejoinder that's endemic to the Middle East mindset. Namely, Achzono Yaseh Sachoseinu. Will they make our sister into a Zona? The non-Jews, they reason, will resonate and acquiesce to our reaction of violating family dignity and honor. Because we know, Ma'abdil Me'avavli Abdolos, such a concept is, I would call it even, not just endemic, but pandemic, here in the Middle East. The notion of family dignity, the honor, the covenant. The Torah here underscores and accentuates that if not for a divine intervention, it would have pulverized the house of Yaakov Avinu. As I mentioned the pasuk a moment ago, Vayichitas Elokim v'lo rotzu acharei b'nei Yaakov. Why? Because no matter what rationale we present, they'll find the chink in the armor. And even though this concept of dignity and family honor, as I mentioned a moment ago, is so prevalent here in the Middle East, but don't worry, whatever we do, the United Nations will condemn us. That we can be assured of. Sanctions will be imposed. There will be BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions will be practiced on us. because they want to prevent the Jewish juggernaut from rearing its ugly head. Of course, to our mazel and siyata d'shmaya, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, and sometimes, if you will, Mahapil, the alter ego of Hashem Yisbarach, that's the United States, will cast a veto to impede this scenario, and other times, they'll just give us a scathing Musa Shmuz. Upon careful scrutiny of that parsha, the trenchant argument of Shimon Belevi rings loud and clear. They said, this act of Shechem contradicts every ethical code of the world. And as I mentioned, Yaakov Avinu is quiescent. Yaakov does not respond to their strong, emphatic, unconditional, unqualified statement. Prima facie, one could assume there's acquiescence on the part of Yaakov Avinu to their line of argumentation. And that's in the context of the Parsha of Shechem in the middle of Bereshit. When we turn to Parshas Vayechi, before the Petira of Yaakov Avinu, he issues a Tzavah, a last will and testament, Yaakov not only reacts to the danger that they created with their act, but Yaakov Avinu, before his Petira, condemns the very act itself. The Pasuk says, Shimon v'levi achim klei chavos mecheroseyeh. Rashi comments, Umanu zu shel ritzicha chamasi bigetchem. Rashi says that umnus that they practice, namely killing out an entire city, that handiwork borders on murder. It's an act of chamas. We're familiar with that term. Outright mayhem. That's the craft of Esav HaRasha. And Yaakov tells his children, Shimon Velevi, you have arrogated for yourself a modus operandi that is not in sync with our hashkafa. Yaakov cursed their anger. What's striking, however, that vis-a-vis Reuben was critiqued for his impetuosity. Reuben was punished, Chazal tell us, with the tripartite loss of Bechora, Kehuna, and Malchus. In sharp contradistinction, however, is Levi. What task is Levi given? So we know from Chazal, Rashi brings it, as mentioned in Medrash, the Pasuk says, Achalke b'Yaakov v'apitze b'Yisrael. Levi is chosen to work in the Beis HaMikdash. From the Shevet Levi, we have Mechanchim, we have educators, Rabbeim, and ultimately from Shevet Levi emerge from their loins, Moshe and Aaron, the leadership of Klal Yisrael. How are we able to countenance that Levi, despite the reprimand, is elevated beyond all the Tzvatim? All these roles that I just mentioned, Yoru Mishpatecha de Yaakov, Misarascha de Yisrael, Yasimu Kitara Beapecha, Necholah Mizbechecha, Barich Hashem Chelo, Ufaal Yodam Tirze, Nechatz Masnayim Kobo, Umisanob in Yikubon. How does one explain all these lofty, elevated kind of roles in light of what they did? The Rambam even writes that Levi became the Rosh Hashiva in Mitzrayim. So there's only one Lefi Anius Daiti, ineluctable conclusion to be derived from all of this. That even though kadosh or zealotry is a character trait that is volatile, Yaakov Avinu found an appropriate channel for their kadosh, namely, Achalki b'Yaakov v'apitzei b'Yisrael. I will bifurcate, I'll isolate Shimon from Levi, I'll separate these two. They'll become the Chanchim, Jewish educators, and the dispersal of Shimon Levi has been compared to the use of melach, to the use of salt in a culinary dish. If the salt is concentrated in one spot, it will spoil the taste of the dish. It will be makalkel. if it's spread out in a uniform, even kind of fashion, it will enhance the flavor and cuisine. And therefore, the separating of Shimon and Levi will enervate their combined sense of zealotry. On the other hand, even though the kanoris will be dissipated, but their individual kanoris can still come to the fore. So it's amazing to me that this quality of Shimon and Levi comes to the fore in many, many different venues. I'll just mention a number of them. The first, Moshe Rabbeinu, was an enukel of Shimon Levi, a grandson of Levi. Moshe Rabbeinu witnesses an Egyptian beating a fellow Jew. Moshe Rabbeinu does not utilize the protection, quote unquote, that he has being that he grew up in the palace of the king, but rather Moshe Rabbeinu intervenes and kills the Egyptian on the spot. This genetic kind of zealotry arouses the fervor of Moshe Rabbeinu, despite the sakonos of poshas that was inherent in that particular action. And we know, as a result of that, Moshe Rabbeinu has to flee. Moshe Rabbeinu becomes a fugitive to Midian. That is the first episode that I will relate. The second, also relating to Moshe Rabbeinu, again a sayyad of Shimon Levi, Moshe is gripped by a sense of moral outrage when he sees the daughters of Yisro, who were shepherds, they came to the well in order to sustain their flock. And the Torah describes that they were banished by the other shepherds who were there, which of course was something that was absolutely unconscionable. So Moshe Rabbeinu sees what happened. Vayokav Moshe appears on the scene, drives away the rowing, Vayashkes Sonam. And those the oppressive shepherds of the well, Moshe Rabbeinu saw that, and that event as well as the earth, earlier event that I just mentioned, they very well have been the backdrop and basis for the upward trajectory that Moshe Rabbeinu assumed in the leadership of Klal Yisrael. He demonstrated qualities of manigos. But these qualities of manigos came as a result of a kind of kados that welled up in him, and he felt the need to act, and he felt the need to do what he did. The third example, of course, is Shimon Levi in the wake of the Cheder Egel, when Moshe Rabbeinu and Yoshua descend from the har, descend from the mountain, and they see what's happening, and of course they're shocked, in a state of turmoil. And Moshe Rabbeinu, after he breaks the luchos and descends, Moshe Rabbeinu issues a call, Mi Lashem Eloi, Vayehasu Elov Kol B'nei Levi. Right away, the Shimon Levi gathers around Moshe Rabbeinu, and he tells them, Simu Ishkarbo Al Yurecho, Ibru Moshubu, Ishar Loshar Bamachadeh, Vihirku Ish Esochi, Vish Esreelu, Vish Eskrovo. Moshe Rabbeinu issues a charge, a kind of battle charge that he unfurls to Shimon Levi, and again, the cherub becomes the operating weapon, and here again we see the kados of Shimon Levi. The fourth episode or incident, of course, is in this week's parsha, in Pinchas, the kados of Pinchas, he's the scion of the Kahuna, and as we know, the end of last week's parsha, Parshas Balak, the Torah describes that he killed Zimri, who perpetrated a sexually provocative act. And the Gemara has in Sanhedrin, Abo la Ramis, that's the version of the Mishnah, Kanoim Pegimbo. So the Torah describes at the end of Parshas Balak that when Moshe, Rabbeinu, and others saw what was happening, so they were absolutely stunned. And undoubtedly, Pinchas observed the reaction of Moshe Rabbeinu and his kingdom, as the pasuk says, "Ve'hema bochim pesach avoy." They were crying. So if Moshe is inactive and almost was rendered paralytic, he simply could not respond and resign to the situation. Why would Pinchas thrust himself into this So I heard many, many years ago from Hagoyim of Yankee Kamneski Zatzal, he said there's one indispensable condition for kadosh, and that is the kadosh has to be 100% the Shem Shamayim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself testifies at the beginning of the parasha of Pinchas, the kadosh kinosi, it's my kina. I myself would have acted in a similar kind of fashion. Hashem Yisbarach says, Hashem cannot stomach this kind of event taking place in a public kind of way. Why could Moshe not have handled the situation himself? So the Gemara Tzahetan tells us that Zimri, with all of his effrontery, appears before Moshe Rabbeinu with the non-Jewish woman in tow, and openly and unabashedly and publicly asks Moshe Rabbeinu, is she permitted to me or not? It's Midyonis. If not, if you tell me no, he told Moshe Rabbeinu with unbelievable chutzpah, who gave you a dispensation to marry the daughter of Yisrael? Zimri attacked Moshe in the most personal way imaginable. Essentially, what he was telling Moshe is that you are acting hypocritically. You married the daughter of Yisrael. Of course, the answer to that question is fairly evident. That took place before Mount Torah, before all the issues of the entire enterprise of Arius and the light came into being. But Moshe Rabbeinu was attacked by Zimri with this very sharp question, and Moshe realized that he now had a personal bias. He had a kind of negia, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu could not throw himself into this issue. He wasn't able to handle the situation, because then it would constitute an action that was partially in some way, whether it's a small way or a larger way, but it was impelled by a negia, by a personal bias, and it would no longer be an act of kadoyis complete with the Shem Shamayim. So kadoyis requires an action which is totally the Shem Shamayim, and that's why we can also understand another statement in Chazal, statement that's well known, that Pinchas Zeh Elio. No, the Elio is the one who appears in every bris. And the Gemara says that Elio is also an individual who is known for his kadosh. Twice in Tanakh we have the well-known position of Elio that he expressed in a very passionate way. Kadosh ki nesi l'Hashem Elokei Tzvakos. He is the kadosh par excellence. And therefore, Pinchas and Elio merge. Pinchas is identified with Elio. Pinchas is a kadoi ben kadoi, and Elio is a kadoi. So this kina of Pinchas, however, the Torah tells us at the beginning of the parasha, warranted his becoming a kohen lanetzach. The Torah says that lo disgayi Pinchas asher harogu lezimri. Pinchas did not become halachically rooted as a kohen until he killed Zimri, but pure kina emanates from Avos Hashem, from Avos Yisrael. It has to be a complete and total love of the Jewish people in an unqualified kind of fashion. Kina has to spontaneously spurt forth or well forth from a heart that's totally connected to Hashem Yisbarach. And at that light now, we can perhaps understand why Yaakov Avinu condemn Shimon Velevi. The moment they made the statement in their defense, Achzono Yaseh Sachoseno, the moment they said that, that reflected an act of vengeance because of family consanguinity, as we alluded to earlier, family dignity, family honor, as opposed to Kina Sashem Tahora, which is devoid of any family bias. And therefore, there was already an element there which was Nagua, there was a Nagia, and that's why Yaakov Avinu condemns them in Parshas Vayechi. Generations later, many, many Doros afterwards, we encounter the Chashmonaim. Matisyahu was not the harbinger of a national movement for freedom, nor was he involved in an agrarian revolution of Jewish farmers against the Syrian Greek imperialists. The Sefer Hashmonaim reports that the revolt began with the murder of a Jew who became an assimilated Syrian Greek, and he worshipped Abed Azara. He practiced idolatry in a public context. Then Matisyo killed the emissary of the king, and ultimately, Klal Yisrael acquired our independence and our sovereignty. The way the Rambam writes in Hilchos Chanukah, the Chazta Malchus Yisrael, Yeser Amasayim Shana Ad Bayis Sheni. So the impetus for all these exploits I discussed till now are not swashbuckling in nature. That's not where it comes from. But rather, a genuine, authentic, Kadoyus Tahora L'Shem Shamayim, in sharp contradistinction to the actions of Shimon Belevi that are undergirded by a personal bias. And that's why the Torah records the fright of Yaakov Avinu, of Rachman Litzan, being despoiled. Similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, who took his cue from Yaakov Avinu, Yaakov, of course, only chastises them in Parshas Vayechi prior to his Petira, because just as Rashi comments in Sefer Dvarim, which is the Sefer Musar that was given by Moshe Rabbeinu to Klal Yisrael before his death, so too Yaakov Avinu waits till his Petira to give Musar to Klal Yisrael, because Chas V'Shalom, he did not want to alienate them. So in effect, Hayotzi Mikol Dvareinu, Lady, merited absorbing asmatically the powerful message of Yaakov and demonstrates this kadosh throughout the millennia. But again, just the most important qualification that I want to underscore and stress, a very significant caveat when it comes to kadosh, it has to be exclusively a function of Abbas Hashem 100%, Abbas Yisrael 100%, and only after developing and cultivating such a persona is one permitted to engage in this kind of kadosh. And that's why the Gemara says also in Masechet Sanhedrin that even though Pinchas killed Zimri because he demonstrated behavior that was unconscionable in the public context, but the Gemara says halacha ve'ein marike, even though that's the din, habol aramis kadoy pogibo. But if we're asked the Shailah, even though the response of Pinchas is correct, we don't publicly teach that this is the way to deal with such a situation. Because, as I said, in order to carry out such an action, one has to be 1,000% certain that when one is engaged in an action that purely emanates from Abbas Hashem and Abbas Yisrael. But the Torah itself testifies, Hashem Yisbarach himself told us, Pinchas ben Alosa ben Aaron HaKayin, my kinna, Hashem is brought his name, that the kinna was in place. Is there this sort of kadosh today? Do we encounter individuals who are kadoyim, who operate from this perspective, from this vantage point? So one of the famous personalities in Eretz Yisrael that I'm sure all of you heard of was Rav Amram Lloyd, Zichrono Livracha. He laid down on the streets of Yerushalayim to prevent traffic on Shabbos. And a vivid proof of his sincerity was the fact that the same police that arrested him week after week attended his levaya, and they cried and they wept for a man of such enormous integrity. Often the kadoyim today and the kadoyim that we see today is a total travesty of authentic zeal for Hashem Yisbarach's Torah. Rather than creating an environment where Torah observance will increase and people will be brought back to Hashem Yisbarach, often they generate a tidal wave of hatred for everything a Torah Jew epitomizes. And misguided kadosh has unquestionably given the media plenty of fodder. As I'll say, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the first of the Luchos, parallels the first commandment in the second Luchos, Lo Sirzach, to there's a parallel between one side and the other side. Namely, between Anochi Hashem Elokecha, not to engage in Ritzicha, not to murder. If you want to know Hashem, you won't engage in murder, because you value the Tzelem Elokim of every single individual. Humiliating someone, the Gemara says, is tantamount to murder. Zealotry of today, vandalism of property, causing damage to people, personal injury, property, hezek, will not lead to a greater love of Hashem, will not lead to a greater commitment to mitzvahs. Shooting bleach or fish oil on women's clothing will not make any woman feel like a bas melech, that she's the daughter of a king. Kadosh has to be something which is, as I indicated, carefully and very methodically and precisely thought through and thought out. And therefore, most of the kadosh that we see today, unfortunately, is unfounded, without any basis, neither in halacha nor in hashkafa. And those kadoshim should do a lot of self-introspection to really examine their behavior carefully and get guidance from Dali Yisrael, who hopefully will give them a proper hadracha. I mentioned at the very beginning of the shiur tonight, when I first met Aliyah, a close chaver of mine, and I consulted many individuals, but this close chaver lived there himself for many years, and he told me the only thing I should be concerned about are the kitzonim, the extremists, the zealots who believe that their ends justify any means, and as far as they're concerned, the only principle that's overriding is called the Olam Gaba. Might makes right. That seems to be the guiding principle. And many of these people who demonstrate aggressive tendencies and violent behavior, they're not involved in Limud HaTorah. Their meltdown, their world outlook is based on hatred of anyone who differs from them. And the target of the hatred, perhaps, maybe, from their perspective, well-intended, but unfortunately, as the Kuzari writes, sometimes you have individuals that even though their kabonos are allegedly the Shem Shamayim, Abu Ma'aseyim, Eina Ritzuyim. Their actions are absolutely repugnant. Their actions are absolutely unfounded. Their actions have no foundation whatsoever from a halachic, from a Torah perspective. The Rambam writes in one of his letters, often we are our own worst enemies. Sometimes I wonder to myself that we call Yisrael Ki'ilu have no enemies surrounding us. We are living in a Shangri-La with Corona, with Iran, with all the terrorists, with all the fuselage rockets, and on and on and on. Everything is wonderful. And we've decided in our state of peace and halcyon, pristine environment to kill ourselves with machlekes, internecine quarrels that eat away at our fundamental achdus, and kadosh sprinkled, if you will, in between. I saw that the present Belzer Rav, Shlita, Yisachar Dov Rokeach, that on Hanukkah, in front of thousands of people, he made the following statement. And I translated from the Yiddish. If there are those in our generation who believe that warfare is the way to spread the light of Judaism, then they are grossly mistaken. They're operating under an egregious error. I heard from the name of Hadoi Rav Elyo Lopyan, the Tzadik Livracha, the great Mashgiach, great tzaddik. He pointed out something very fascinating. The verse says in Brachas, a chazal mesakein, kol ha'omer ashrei, shalosh pam b'chol yom, muftach lo shu ben olam haba. One who says ashrei three times a day is assured a place in the world to come. Ashrei has in it, as you undoubtedly know, many of the midos of Hashem Yisbarach. Very large segment of Hashem Yisbarach's midos that were obligated to follow and to emulate are found in Ashrei. So the Gemara already is concerned about the Seder of Asherai, and of course the Seder of Alabez. Rabbi Eliyahu Levyan, in an unbelievable quip, made the following statement. When we go through the Asherai and we see the litany of Midos of Hashem Yisbarach, and often we skip most of them and are only focused on the pasuk at the end of Asherai. A well-known pasuk. David HaMelech says at the end of Asherai, Shomer Hashem Eskolo Abov Eskolo Shoyim Yashmi. So we quickly run to the end of Asherai, and we're worried about eliminating all the Rishoyim. He quotes. A Rosh, of course, means someone who does not agree with my Hashkafa, with my worldview, with my perspective, as it did Russia. That's the end of Asherai. But we skip the entire beginning of Asherai, which essentially has the following midos. Tov Hashem Lakol. Virachamav al kol maso. Yoduch Hashem kol masecha v'chasidecha yiruchucha. Someh Hashem b'chol hanofle. Poseach es yodecho mazbiya l'chol chai ratzon. Tzadik Hashem b'chol duracha v'chasid b'chol maso. There are many wonderful, beautiful midos that I mentioned at the beginning of Asherai. Being a chosid. Being a merachem. Being tov v'kol. Being a Baal Chesed. So what do? We skip all the above and quickly run to the Midah, Bezkol HaShoyim Yashmin. My job is to eliminate all the Rishonim in the world. This is Rav Eli Yachyan, Zechatzal Dibracha. And Rav Yankel Kamenetsky, that I mentioned earlier, Zechatzal Dibracha, always pointed out, this you saw, I heard it from him myself, that one has to be an unbelievable Oh, Hashem, and call yourself in order to practice kanos in a proper kind of way. I mentioned earlier, Rav Avraham Bloy, Zichrono Livracha, he was known to be a great kanoi, Meir Shorim, and yet he had a connection, he had a relationship with the Rizkalov of all people. The Rizkalov was the Kari Rav Avraham Bloy. Why? Because, as I said, even the policemen who arrested him on an ongoing basis came to his levaya, and the Briskerov knew him very well and indicated that his kanos was on Piyat Torah. And before he went and engaged in acts of kanos, he usually consult with Gedolei Yisrael. Just to give you one example, and this example I heard from the Mashgiach of Kabbalah, Sagoin, Rav Moshe Aaron Stern, Zeh Hassan de Bracha, he told over that Rav Amram Bloy, when he saw a child in Meir Shorim area, Rachman with son throwing garbage on a young Jewish woman who he felt was not dressed in a proper kind of way. So right away, Rabbi Amaboy came running and told this young child, what in heaven's name are you doing? This is a Bas Yisrael. How could you go ahead and throw Rachman with son garbage on top of her? Yes, there's an obligation perhaps to make a machor, but to do so in a proper, appropriate, Sadua, five kind of way, al pi dini haTorah. Rabbi Moshe Aaron Stern said over that he had an uncle, Rabbi Aaron Katsinella Bogin, who was one of the heads of the Kanoim in Yerushalayim, but he was also a great Gadol baTorah, a great Torah giant. He was learning 24/7. So he heard that in Yerushalayim there were two outstanding Bochrim, many, many years ago, who were Mufogi Batera. One of them was Avraham Katzenella Bogin, and he knew what the Kadosh was all about. But again, the way he practiced Kadosh was with an unbelievable sensitivity to the sensibilities of others, even though he had very firm positions that he demonstrated and he expressed. So Kadosh is a double-edged sword. As I began earlier, spoke about, I saw an unbelievable story in one of the Svarim of Hagoyin of Chaim Zaitchik, a great Navardika. I was lucky to hear from him in the 70s, a number of Busa Shmuzi. So in this sefer Pri Haaretz, he tells over a story. I don't know what the makor for the story is, but it's an unbelievable story. He tells over that the Ramban once had great difficulties with a what is known today as a meiser, an individual who unfortunately, tragically, informed on Klal Yisrael against the government. So the Ramban allegedly sent someone to drown this meiser, to get rid of him in a river. And at the end, the shliach himself drowned. The one who was sent to carry out this mission, he himself drowned in the river. They asked the Ramban, how could this be? You sent out this individual to be mekayim shlichus to get rid of a meiser. So the Ramban answered, the reason is because this shliach had gevaltke hanor, had gevaltke pleasure from the action he was about to do. He was about to get rid of the meiser, and because of that hanor, he was ne'anash min hashamayim. He was punished by Hashem Yisbarach. And in a similar kind of fashion, that's what the Sma points out in Chashem Ishbad, in Simen Tov Chafei, Simkat Yud Gimel. That in the story of Pinchas, which is essentially a realization of the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Havoy Al-Avam is Kanoi and Bobimbo, only a Kanoi whose Kabbana is 100% of Hashem Shamayim can go ahead and kill such a person. I heard from Soloveitchik Zatzal, in the name of his grandfather, Rav Chaim Briska, and they say over the same thing was said by Hagdolei Rabbeinu Gruzinovsky Zatzal, also the name of Rav Chaim, but the mocker is Rav Chaim, that the sinah to Rishoyim, the hatred, or the, shall we say, attitude we should have towards Rishoyim, should be similar to the sinah that a balat habayit, that a woman has towards achbarim. If there are rodents, if there are mice in the home, she doesn't want them, obviously. She has a hatred for them. She wants to get rid of them. She doesn't want their kiyum. However, it should be comparable to the achbarim, and not comparable to the chatul, to the cat, who wants those mice to be around. Why? Because he needs food. He needs victuals. So the attitude should be a proper one, an appropriate one. And Rav Chaim Zaitchik told over the following. He said that once he was davening in a shul on Palavai Pesach, and one of the people who was davening there approached the bima and announced in a very yomtadika kind of fashion, anyone who ate Bishvin Matzah Pesach, Hareyu Oichel Chometz. That person is guilty of eating chometz. As you know, when Bishvin Matzah originally came to the fore, maybe 150 years ago, there were those who felt that there was something missing that the machine could not possibly produce. Namely, the Torah requires that the Matzah be baked lishma, and a machine cannot be produced lishma. Today we have come to the Maskana that by pressing the button of the machine, that is sufficient lishma, and it's not a problem. So this fellow announces public chagigi kind of announcement with glee in his eyes, and anyone who ate machine matzah ate chometz. The Talmud Chacham came over to him and said, "You know, my friend, that someone who eats chometz on Pesach has v'sholom is chayav kores. So if your kavana was really l'shem shamayim, when you made this announcement, you should have been in dread. You should have been quaking in fear that Achmar Kuvitzlan, look how many Jews who ate machine matzah on Pesach are now guilty of kares. But instead, how do you make this announcement? With glee, with tremendous simcha, with tremendous hanor." That's an indication that obviously this kind of kadosh is absolutely unfounded, not grounded, no basis for this kind of kadosh. So kadosh has to be something which is a shem shamayim, has to be founded upon a sense of love, of ahava for Klal Yisrael, And we know that if that's the case, then that kanois will lead to what the pasuk says in Pinchas, what Hashem promised Pinchas, Inini nosi lo es brisi shalom. It's amazing. As a result of kanois, what emerges? Shalom. Pinchas is lochem, milchemet Hashem. And yet the Torah says that at the very shoresh of what he did, his interest was lahashkin shalom, to somehow create an atmosphere, an environment of shalom, because we know that the entire Torah, as the Rambam writes at the end of Hilchos Chanukah, Zvachea dachi noam, v'chol v'sivoseh shalom. Those who abandon the Torah, they are the ones who are undermining shalom, and therefore one who demonstrates what Pinchas did with his act of kanos is really once again restoring the shalom, Ben Yisrael Abim Shvashamayim. But only with one proviso. The precondition, the tzna'i, has to be kabonos, tahoros, 100% l'shem shamayim. And so that level, that madrega, is certainly not an easy one to achieve. I'll just mention, I saw in the name of the Chassam Sofer that the Chassam Sofer was, in the course of his lifetime, was heavily involved in many, many struggles with the maskilim, for those who wanted to reform Orthodox Judaism, and he was very strong in the position that he took, and he pursued his antagonists, the Shetz of Kesev, without Rachmanis. So once they asked him, Yilvabdenu Rabbeinu, the Chassam Sofer was known as a person who was Adam Noach Meitav Labrios. He was a kind person, he was a very sweet individual. It was about Rachamim. It was a Tov Lev. Why is it when it comes to a Melchava, with these people, you somehow become a Kanoi? And Samsova answered with the Psukim that I found, when the Torah describes in Parshas Balak, the encounter between Bilam and the Malach Hashem. Pasuk says, Vayisyatzei Malach Hashem Baderech L'Satan Lo. That the Malach Hashem came, and essentially the Malach was the one who blocked the Asam from moving further, and Bilam was not aware of that. So Rashi comments on the Lashon of Malach Hashem, says Rashi, Malach shel rachamim oyo. And all the first Shem asked an obvious question. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu Dafka send now a Malach shel rachamim? And how did the Malach shel rachamim become a son? The Pasuk says, Vayisaseh Malach Hashem baderech lisatan lo. So it's Mamashma said the Sam Sefer that only someone who's a Baal Rachim HaKlal Yisrael, only such an individual can wage a war against Bila. Because Bigolda Rachmanus and Am Yisrael, someone who's a Kanoi, is obviously interested in protecting Klal Yisrael, but only because he has a full measure of Rachmanus, a full measure of Abba, can he become a Kanoi Nilhab. I don't think we have too many people in our generation who can achieve such levels. And therefore, before a person goes ahead and decides to act with kinnah for Hashem Yisbarach, one has to think 1,000 times and consult with many. It's interesting that the pasuk kayadu alachem, inni nosilas brisi shalom, so the bavim shalom is tatua kayadua. Because ain't shalom, Amar Hashem l'Rishoyim, and even though the Mishnah writes and the Gemara says ain't kli matzik bracha yosim and hashalom, but in order to achieve shalom amiti, one has to achieve it in the right way, using the right strategy, and somehow without the vav, that's the remez here in this vav katua, by eliminating the vav, to read the pasuk as shalom. At times, actually, in effect, in order that the Torah should become shalom, we have to engage in these kinds of activities. However, one has to be exceptionally and extraordinarily careful that one should be the Kaddishim Shamayim and not the Chalashim Shamayim. And we'll just end with the famous Yisod of the Chabetz Chaim, Zechasad Dibracha, he commented on the Pasuk in Kriyat Shema, that if a person is matrish in himself, Abbas Hashem is brach the Yeroso, then undoubtedly he'll be mechanech his children in the proper kind of way. And I'll just mention in the context of this siyum, I'm going to say Shabbat, it's one of the zmiros that we sing is about Eliyahu HaNavi, Eliyahu HaTishbi, Eliyahu HaGilavi. And we ask that Hashem should, in Hera Yavo Eleinu, in Mashiach Medavi. And the other way we introduce him as Isha Shekine L'Shem Okel. However, a bit further, in that beautiful period of Motzei Shabbos, there's the following statement. Ish Kara, a man who made the following statement, Kano Kinesi L'Hashem Bisif Ora. And his Kano was the Tiferes Hashem is Barach. Mashma, that statement, that there's also a Kano that's not the Tiferes Hashem is Barach. So if one is going to engage in Kanos, one better make sure 1,000% that the one does so in a proper kind of fashion. And the Piyam Yosaiti, it seems to me that our door is the door that Kanos is not the ideal by any means. And one should try to utilize other strategies and other methodologies and other approaches, primarily the approach that was practiced by Avraham Avinu, namely, chesed, writ large, chesed v'hispashnus, chesed without any end. If one utilizes those strategies utilized by Avraham Avinu, the Baal Chesed par excellence, there's no doubt, there's no question that Baruch Hashem will be able to bring about to effect a major change in Klal Yisrael and Halavai. That will bring us, in effect, to a closeness, to Hashem Yisbar, to a Tzveikus. And as I've said many, many times in the context of these shiurim, halavai that the chesed that we do, milmato, will be ma'orio, the chesed milmalo. And just as we say, la'abdil, and halavai, Hashem nosan, Hashem lokach, Hashem, Hashem mevorach, Hashem brought upon us this plague for reasons that we don't know. Halavai, Hashem lokach, Hashem should take away this plague. Undoubtedly, the schutz of chesed, beizu Hashem, Hashem, Hashem mevorach, Klal Yisrael be zoche. So once again, coming back to where we were, to where we should be, and the Ezra Hashem is Barach will be doubled by Hashem is Barach. Don't give it.